Crystalline landscapes, stark color contrast, wild animals with their lush winter coats or bright plumage. Winter is a wonderful time to get out and take pictures. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For many of us, January is something to survive, a great time to curl up inside, limiting outside adventures to the quick dash from house to car and car to work. For wildlife photographers, winter can provide amazing opportunities. Today, I'll talk with three of Iowa's most gifted wildlife photographers, Ty Smedes, Larry Stone, and Don Pogensey. We'll find out why it's worth it to brave the cold with your camera. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many of us go into semi-hibernation mode in the winter months, staying inside as much as we possibly can. For photographers who are willing to brave the cold, winter can be a very special time. Today, I'll talk with three of Iowa's most gifted wildlife photographers. Later this hour, Larry Stone, former outdoors writer and photographer from the Des Moines Register, will talk to us from his home near Elkader. And Don Pogensey, a photographer based in Ida Grove in western Iowa, will also be with us. But first, photographer Ty Smedes is here. He's a full-time outdoor writer and photographer based in Urbandale. You've probably seen a great deal of his work in the Iowan magazine. He recently published an article in Iowa Outdoors, and his most recent book is The Return of Iowa's Bald Eagles. Hello, Ty.
Well, hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
When did you first pick up a camera?
You know, I first started with a camera, like a lot of people in the olden days, with a Brownie Kodak. And then I got more interested and wanted to take quality photos. So in 1980, I purchased my first 35 millimeter, which is a Canon AE-1.
And when did you point your lens at natural images? When did you get involved in nature photography?
Well, I grew up on a farm and always had an interest in the outdoors and hunting and fishing. And I like to duck hunt quite a lot. And I saw an article where a gentleman used a floating blind that was constructed and looked like a muskrat house. And he went out into the water and had his chest waders on. And, of course, he was incredibly well concealed, and so he got really close to the ducks and geese. So not long after I acquired that Canon AE-1, I went out and bought me a little Vivitar Series 1 70-210 zoom, which doesn't have a lot of power by today's standards, but I got my chest waders. I created one of those blinds and went out and started photographing waterfowl. And then soon thereafter, some folks at the Iowa DNR became aware of my success and asked to use some of the photos.
So had you already pursued a different career path and then were kind of drawn into photography?
Yes, that's true. I worked for several decades for the state of Iowa in the Capitol Complex in information technology, or what we initially called data processing.
And was it a difficult decision to make that leap into being a photographer?
You know, it wasn't, Charity. I really enjoyed my job at the state of Iowa, and particularly the last few years. I even did some work for the governor's office, and that was very gratifying working with Governor Vilsack's staff. But I also like the outdoors. It's nice to be on your own schedule, be your own boss, and do some things that you think are helping the greater good and to make people aware of some of the problems in the environment and the beauty that we have. And so I just slowly plan to change careers, and I did that 10 years ago.
Did you ever have any formal training as a photographer?
You know, I did. Most people would probably say I'm self-taught, but I have enrolled in several one-week seminars around the country with some top professionals. And a week here and a week there, you know, really, really helped to refine techniques.
So you had that early success getting pictures of waterfowl by going out there on the lake. What are some of the other techniques that you use to get close to wildlife? Because when people look at your pictures, you know, they, we're really right there. And obviously you're using a powerful lens, but you have to find the animals and get close enough to take the pictures.
Well, that's correct. And that's where being a lifetime hunter helped me. I think every hunter learns wildlife and their manners and where they feed, where they sleep, the trails that they follow each day or the routes they fly. And so since I knew a lot of that, I began constructing photo blinds and spending a lot of time and learning their seasonal, traits. And that really, really helped.
Was there a point at which you had an epiphany that you realized that winter is really an amazing time to take pictures?
Oh, no, I realized that from the get-go. As a hunter, you really learn to love winter. Beautiful new snowfalls and ice crystals on the trees and things like that just make spellbinding photos. And, of course, it's really interesting to photograph the wildlife as they're coping. You know, like I photographed eagles on the wing with icicles on their toes and on their beaks and things like that. I've seen fascinating things. So winter's a wonderful, wonderful time to be out and capture some nature images.
I think a lot of people don't have that instinct, though. I think a lot of people just really do think about it as a time to stay inside, and they don't want to get their equipment icy. And so when people say things like that to you, what do you tell them?
Well, I agree that that's probably true, but then I try to point out some of the beauty that you can see with what I just pointed out. And the other thing is a lot of people are really worried about getting too cold. And I'm a little older, so I remember 30 years ago when a lot of the clothing wasn't all that good. And when you went out, you could get really, really cold really, really quickly. But now they have the best clothing. You layer up in high insulate coveralls. You have these 60 degree below rated boots. And then you have chemical packs for your toes and your hands, and I can go out and photograph eagles all afternoon for 4 hours in minus 15 degree temperatures and be pretty darn comfy. So I encourage people, don't think like we used to. Get out and check out some of those warm clothes. You can go out there and be comfortable, and it's a whole new way of enjoying the outdoors.
What makes it striking visually, do you think, to take pictures during the winter?
You know, I think the power of winter, if you can capture something like that eagle flying along with ice crystals on its belly feathers or toes, a ringneck pheasant that has ice on his tail, a deer with new fallen snow on his back or on his horns. I think seeing the ice and snow and the interplay, just showing the harshness and the powerfulness of winter is really, really the interesting thing.
So when you go out to take pictures, is there a certain kind of weather condition that makes you think, I really want to get out there today?
Yes, there is. Sometimes we want clear, sunny days, and particularly you'd like the sun at your back because you want the colors of something like a ringneck pheasant or perhaps a prothonotary warbler to really, really pop. But stormy, moody days are very, very interesting too. I know I have had the privilege of taking several groups to Africa. And the last time we went in 2010, we went during the rainy season, which a lot of people poo-poo. But the storm clouds, the thunderstorms moving across the Serengeti, the incredible light through the trees on some of the birds was just fantastic, just really, really dynamic.
Are there days when you look out the window and you just know it's a bad day for taking pictures?
Yes, there is. Generally, if you get some of the really dark overcast days, the colors don't pop, things are just kind of murky. Or if it's really, really windy. I also photograph a lot of wildflowers and prairie settings. And on a windy day, you just have to leave it alone.
It's a good day to stay home.
Right.
So people do worry about their camera equipment out in cold conditions. Are there any things that you need to do to prepare your equipment to take it out and photograph eagles for 4 hours when it's 15 below?
Well, there is, and I teach classes quite regularly, and one of the first questions I'm asked, Charity, about winter photography is, how do you keep your batteries charged? How do you keep your camera from going dead? And, you know, I've been photographing in the winter for 30 years, and it simply hasn't happened. I use rechargeable batteries, and I make sure that they aren't real old. If they're more than a couple years old, I get rid of them. But the thing you need to do is to charge them and top them off just before you go out the door. And if you do that, you just won't have any problem.
So you haven't found that there's any difference in battery usage when it's cold or in other conditions?
Your batteries will pull down, that's for sure. But if they've been charged the night before, you should make it through 4 or 5 hours of photography pretty easily.
What are some other tips about the equipment? Because if you go in and out and in, you're going to have lenses fogging up and things like that. What do you do to make sure that doesn't happen to you?
Well, that's a good question. Camera equipment obviously gets really, really cold once you've kept it outside for a time. So what you really need to do is keep it inside a camera bag, either a hard-sided or a soft-sided case, and let it acclimate indoors for a couple of hours. If you don't, and you bring it outside and into a warm, moist living room, you'll get condensation, and that can be dangerous to the life of the camera equipment.
Okay, so you just need to let it, to take your time and let it acclimate.
Right. Sometimes you get back indoors, you think you've got some really great images, and you want to break that camera open and pull the card out or the film in the olden days, and you just have to be patient and just wait an hour or two, and then you can go about that.
I'm imagining you spending 4 hours outside taking pictures of eagles. I mean, how many pictures would you take during a session like that?
Well, it's hard to say. In my new book, I've got over 200 eagle photos alone, and I have a diary that I kept where I photographed a nest over by Redfield on the Middle Raccoon River. And I spent 21 mornings and 84 hours in that blind, and I literally took thousands of photos. But it's feast or famine, Charity. Sometimes you don't get much activity. You hardly take any photos, or maybe just a few, and then the next time it's just bam, 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 bam. Everything happens. So you just never know.
So when you get back thousands of pictures and you're going through, and I can imagine with fast shutter speeds that there are probably times when there are only minute differences between one photo and the next. How do you pick the photos that you want to use?
Well, that's a great question. You need to keep taking pictures. I'll cite a good example of a case in point. Last spring, an eagle flew up to the nest and landed about 20 feet away, and I looked at it through the lens, and it had what appeared to be a leopard frog. And the reason it was catching frogs was that the river was so dirty it couldn't see to catch fish. So anyway, I took a picture, and the eagle moved a little bit, and I took another, and I took another, and I took another. Well, when I got home and I reviewed all of the pictures, the very last one was a photo where the eagle turned its head just right, and I could actually see it was a pair of mating leopard frogs, which is truly a once-in-a-lifetime photo, but only because I kept shooting and that last picture revealed it, did I have the shot.
Wow. I'm talking with nature photographer Ty Smedes, and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We're also going to be talking with Larry Stone, another outdoor writer and photographer well known to many Iowans, and we'd love to hear from you as well. You can join our conversation. Share your stories of that great shot that you got one winter day. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about winter photography. And with me is Ty Smedes. He's a photographer and a writer who's based in Urbandale. A lot of his work is published in the Iowan magazine, and his most recent book is The Return of Iowa's Bald Eagles. Also joining us now is Larry Stone. He's the former outdoors writer and photographer for the Des Moines Register. He's done a great deal of freelance work and also is the author of 5 books. He lives near Elkader. Hello, Larry.
Good morning, Charity and Ty. Good to talk with you.
Good morning, Larry.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Larry. And I also want to take a moment to say, if you'd like to join our conversation, if this is a hobby of yours, you'd like to share a story or ask for some tips, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And if you have access to your photos right now and you have an outstanding nature photo that you'd like to share with us, send it to our email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, and we'll post it on our Facebook page. You can also tweet us the picture at IPR Talk. We'd love to see it and share it with our other listeners. Again, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Larry, when did you first start taking pictures?
Oh, guys, you're making me show my age now. The 1960s, I was in school, had friends who was photographers, and I got started that way. And even as a kid on the farm, I took some. But seriously, in the late 60s, and then when I started with the Des Moines Register in 1971, I guess, and was taking photos then for the writing I was doing for the Register.
Was nature photography always a draw for you once you got the shutter bug?
I've always been interested in nature and the outdoors. I think, as Ty mentioned, you know, us farm kids like nature, and so that always is a prime interest. But when I was working for the Register as the outdoor writer, I was, you know, looking for people, Iowans, outdoors, and a friend of mine liked to talk about capturing that people and nature interface. And I guess that always struck me as a goal, is to try to get, you know, people doing things, people enjoying the outdoors, because, and Ty is probably one of our premier wildlife photographers. I'm not as good a wildlife photographer as Ty, but I like to think that I can capture what people are doing as they are reacting to and enjoying Iowa's outdoors.
You're very gracious, Larry.
Well, Larry, can you give me an example of maybe one of the first great shots that you got, and you just remember knowing that you really nailed that interaction?
Oh, golly. Again, you're testing my memory here. But, well, I guess one of my favorites was a hunter against the sunrise with his dog. And the dog and the hunter were interacting. And, you know, there's a real intimate communication from the dog and the hunter that you could see in the silhouette and then the kind of the sunrise behind it. And that, to me, it was, you know, I think hunters especially can relate to that, you know, being out in the beauty of outdoors and having the dog and then having that kind of that special moment.
Well, it's interesting talking about hunting. And, Ty, I want to ask you, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people who do a lot of nature photography, try to take pictures of wildlife, who are not hunters and have a hard time understanding spending this time getting so close to an animal and taking pictures, and also being someone who would do the same thing and shoot the animal. Did spending that time with the camera and studying your subjects, did that change your hunting at all?
It did. It gave me a much greater appreciation for the wildlife as a resource, and you know, their vulnerability, I guess. So yes, it really, really did.
Okay. I'm sure that there are many different approaches to that, and I know a lot of photographers who started out as hunters and realized they wanted to capture the images. Ty was talking earlier, Larry, about building a duck blind and getting really close to waterfowl, and those being some of his first really great nature shots. Do you remember any early techniques that you used to really blend in with your environment and get some great shots?
Well, I heard Ty talking about his artificial muskrat house, and I indeed attempted that. I didn't have the success that Ty did. Maybe I wasn't persistent enough. He got some really fantastic shots. And I spent some time in blinds one of them that I remember especially, a friend was working on a research project on ruffed grouse up in Yellow River Forest up in northeast Iowa. And I wanted to get some pictures of the grouse on the drumming log, which is kind of a real phenomenon. So I arranged with him to find a drumming log that he thought that the grouse would be using in the morning. And I pitched my tent, pretty close, probably 25, 30 feet from the drumming log, and then slept in the tent. And as luck would have it, I was awakened the next morning, just essentially still dark, with the grouse drumming on the log. So I got some pretty decent photos of that grouse on the drumming log. And that was a real memorable experience.
You know, we've talked a lot about taking pictures of birds, Ty, and I know you focused a lot on eagles recently, and Iowa has become a wonderful place to take pictures of eagles. But I want to ask a little bit about mammals, because I think with a great telephoto lens, getting pictures of birds, that may be a little easier than getting pictures of mammals. Is that true?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay.
With birds, you know, they're so flighty and they can be gone in an instant. I really don't think so. Mammals are a challenge and birds are a challenge. One thing I learned a long time ago is sometimes you'll photograph an animal, a bird or a mammal, and it can be really easy and you think, oh, golly, I've got enough photos. So you quit and you quit too early. And you try to get near that bird or mammal again, and it's years and years. So, boy, when the opportunity presents itself, you just really have to try and shoot that bird or mammal from every angle and in every conceivable way you can think of, because it may never happen again.
Well, I was looking at the article that you recently published in Iowa Outdoors, which, of course, is about winter photography. And you have this just unbelievable photo of two red foxes playing or fighting. I'm not sure. I'm guessing playing. But
oh, they were fighting.
They were fighting. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just this unbelievable shot of them, you know, both of their mouths wide open, engaged in battle. How did you get that picture?
Well, we're really lucky. My wife and I live on an acreage, and we've been there in Urbandale for 20 years, and we have foxes. At first, they denned under the floor of an old corn crib across the fence, and then that was torn down and a new house was built. And now they den every year under our workshop building about 120 feet from the back door. So I've got red fox coming and going all the time and just a lot of opportunities that a lot of people really, really wouldn't have.
Wow. Are there other mammals that are very elusive, very difficult to take pictures of?
Oh, absolutely. Deer are pretty cagey. They have great hearing. They have a great nose, can really detect your scent quite well. Deer are really tough. You really have to learn where to be and where not to be to get good deer photos.
And I got to follow up on that, Ty. You have some amazing mammal photography. I really got to commend you on. Coyotes are a tough one. We live in an area where we hear coyotes. You know, literally, we can be inside the house with the windows closed and hear coyotes, but you just almost never see them. I think, you know, if people find a den, that may be a way to do it.
Right.
There are people who are predator callers who can
right.
call them in. I haven't had success. Maybe you have to do it.
A little.
Yeah. So, but I'm also lucky in that I live in the deer country, for sure, and I literally see deer out my window nearly every day, and I, frankly, have a camera set up at the window, and they often will get up close enough to the house where I can get some photos.
So you shoot through the glass?
Well, I prefer not to. Depending on how cold the day is, I really try to open the window, but you can get decent shots through glass, but I'm a purist. I would rather just have not shoot through glass.
Well, and you mentioned coyotes, and again in this Iowa Outdoors article, Ty, you have this amazing shot of a coyote in winter running, and I can only imagine that you just had a split second to get that picture.
Well, that's right. I was out photographing deer and was sitting in a blind, and all of a sudden this guy was at the edge of a field, and there was a vehicle on a road, and I think it kind of spooked him, and off he went bounding through the snow right across in front of me.
Wow.
Being ready for that opportunity paid off, right?
Yeah, sometimes it's, you know, what they call F8 and be there.
We have a caller on the line, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. JJ is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, JJ.
Hi there, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
My question is, as kind of an enthusiast photographer who has been kind of frustrated with being able to get kind of close enough to the eagles, as an enthusiast, I don't often have the time to, you know, set up a blind and dedicate that type of time, given that I'm trying to do it, you know, over lunch hours and before and after work. If there's a lens short of, you know, the really, really expensive 400 to 600 millimeter prime lenses, and I'm shooting Canon, that you would recommend that's, you know, somewhere south of $5,000, that would be a good kind of eagle lens, you know, what your recommendations on something like that are. Some of the ones I've seen are like maybe the, there's a Canon has a 300-28 or a 500, I think it's 5.6, something like that, that you would recommend to try to be a good long lens that doesn't break the bank.
Who's the question for?
Well, either one of you.
I'm going to let Ty take that one. Right. I know he's got some pretty good equipment.
Well, I get that question all the time, and I'm sure Larry does too. people want a really great lens that will take really great images that would possibly win a photo contest or allow them to be able to make a large print to put on their wall. Unfortunately, the really good lenses really do cost thousands of dollars. I did give a program a couple of weeks ago, and a couple of people in the audience had a Sigma. I believe it was a 150 to 500 lens. It's a fairly slow lens. I believe it's a 6.3, but on a sunny day, both these gentlemen said they were getting pretty good results on bald eagles. Now, you also mentioned a 300-28. That's more expensive. I think that's going to be a couple thousand dollars more. But that's a very sharp lens, and you can put a matched doubler onto it, which makes it 600 millimeter, and that would be a good combination also.
Thank you. Just one last follow-up with that. I mean, would it be your recommendation to save a little bit more and get the image stabilized version of that lens, or would you say just try to hope that you have enough light and your shutter speed is fast enough that you don't really need that when you're trying to track birds flying?
Well, image stabilization is always good. I know when that first became available, I thought it was a gimmick, and I found out it wasn't. So with birds in flight, it's not really really an issue, but I think you'll find that you'd like to use that lens eventually for other things, and image stabilization is always great.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, JJ. And in your article, Ty, you write about using a tripod setup whenever possible when doing winter photography. Why is that?
Well, two things, Charity. First of all, the telephoto lenses that we use for wildlife are pretty heavy, and if you hold it, the weight will compress the insulation in your gloves, and your hands will get cold pretty quickly. Another thing is to, if you get down to slow shutter speeds, like a 60th or a 125th of a second, the magnification of the telephoto lens will create a little bit of a shake, and you'll have blurry images. And then the third thing is using a camera and lens on a tripod causes you generally to look through the lens and survey your foreground, your background, and all four quarters of the images, and you just become more deliberate. You find you take better pictures. You tend to eliminate some of the things that shouldn't be in the picture, if at all possible, and you end up with better compositions.
Larry, do you have any advice on that?
And I got a second what Ty has to say. I'm sometimes get a little lazy, and I don't take the tripod, and you know, because you know it can be heavy and cumbersome. But it really does help you spend the time, as Ty said, to be, you know, more careful about the photos, you know, the images you're trying to shoot. And so I think it's, by all means, take it if you can.
Well, and Ty, you also mentioned that it helps keep your fingers warmer, too.
Well, absolutely. The bigger, heavier lenses, usually two, are made of metal, so that really transfers the cold to your fingers.
Okay.
One thing about a tripod is if you're going to use a tripod, you ought to have a cable release or electronic release as well, so you're not using your cold fingers to try to punch the shutter and still wiggling the lens. If you can use a cable release, that's going to be a big help.
Oh, good point.
Do you have any secrets, Larry, when you go out in the winter to take pictures? We talked about what Ty wears to keep warm. How about you?
Well, just the modern clothes are a big help, you know, the insulated boots and the whole works. I guess now I can laugh. A number of years ago, I was photographing some owls, and it was something below zero, and I've always said, you know, keep your camera tight up against your face and minimize shake. Well, I ended up frostbiting the tip of my nose because the back of my camera was cold. So, and I wear glasses, so it doesn't work so well to use a face mask. So it just be a little bit careful.
Right.
And don't, if you see some dust or something on your lens, don't blow it off because you'll fog your lens.
All right. Is there a something out there, Larry, that is sort of your holy grail, something that you're really dying to get a picture of that you haven't had yet?
Well, I'm admire Ty and his coyote work. Coyotes are elusive ones, but and I like to make photographs of the moon at different times. You know, when the moon is full and it's either going down just in the west in the morning on a cold winter day, or just coming up in the east and in the evening. At you pick the right time, you can get the moonscape. And it'll light up, with the snow on the ground especially. It can be pretty dramatic. And I've always said, okay, now if I can get the perfect shot of the silhouette of the eagle against the moon going to roost or something like that.
Someday. Well, Larry, can you stay with us for a little
sure.
while longer? Great.
Yeah,
I'm talking to Larry Stone, the former outdoors writer and photographer for the Des Moines Register, and Ty Smedes, who is a full-time outdoor writer and photographer based in Urbandale. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We're also getting some photographs from people who are listening. If you go to our Facebook page, you can see a couple that have been sent in. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about winter nature photography, and I have with me this hour some of the premier nature photographers of Iowa. Ty Smedes is here with us. He is a full-time outdoor writer and photographer based in Urbandale. You often see his work in the Iowan magazine. One of his most recent books is The Return of Iowa's Bald Eagles. Larry Stone is also with us. He's the former outdoors writer and photographer for the Des Moines Register. He's also done a great deal of freelance work and is the author of 5 books. And now joining us is Don Pogensee. He's a photographer who's based out west in Ida Grove. Hello, Don.
Hello. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're quite welcome.
Well,
hi, Don.
I made Larry and Ty tell us their origin stories. So, Don, when did you first start taking pictures?
Well, believe it or not, I'm still a young photographer. I started in 1964. When I was in the U.S. Air Force, and our mission was to take troops and supplies to Vietnam and bring the wounded and the dead out. And then I got transferred to a weather squadron, and we tracked hurricanes. And when the hurricanes weren't blowing, we did air sampling of the atomic test site. And then we snooped on Russia and China, mainly in the early 60s when they were detonating atmospheric atomic bombs. And so I started photographing mainly doing travel and destination work and covering some of the areas that I got to see courtesy of our government.
When did you start taking pictures of nature?
Shortly thereafter. I've always had an interest in nature. Grew up on a small farm. Did those nice things like get up early in the morning, milk cows. But I always had an interest in nature and wildlife. And so after I got discharged, I really turned into working nature and photography. But I've also, through the years, not only photographed nature and wildlife, but a lot of other areas as well.
Well, I was looking at your pictures that I was able to find on the internet, and there's this wonderful picture that Chuck Offenberger printed when he did a story about you of a little saw-whet owl in winter, and it has snow on its wings, and these are tiny owls. And Larry, this is why I kept you around, because I want to talk about taking pictures of owls, since you were mentioning that earlier as well. But Don, how on earth did you get that picture of this little saw-whet owl in snow?
Well, those are actually 4 different saw-whets. I've been monitoring the saw-whet owl migration. They come into Iowa kind of in October. We usually see them by the end of October, early November. So I've been monitoring the saw-whet owls for about 20 years. I'm on the conservation board here in Ida County, and I'm always out in the parks, and so I'm checking on the owls. And we had we had the snow Sunday night into Monday morning, and I had four solid owls that I've been watching, and each one of the four had snow on them, and that's you don't see that very often. You know, they're huddled up in a pine tree, and snow coming down, and it was just one of those wonderful moments in nature when you're out there with the snow coming down and you're alone with nature and wildlife, and just being able to appreciate the beauty and the wonder of nature. And of course, the northern solid owl is a very docile owl. It'll sit on a tree limb and actually let you get very close to it. Matter of fact, yesterday, one of those four we banded. We just reached up and grabbed him. We had a federal bander in the park, and he put a band on him, and we let him go, and he went kind of right back to the same tree area.
Wow. What time of day did you get those pictures?
It was probably between 9:30 in the morning and 11 Monday morning. It was still snowing, and I was out there for about 2 hours walking in the snow. And to find those little sawwits, here in Iowa, they like to sit in pine trees as well as some cedar trees. They tend to sit 5-6 feet off the ground in kind of open branches. And once you're able to know what to look for, some of the whitewash that they drop and the pellets they throw up, it's fairly easy to find them.
Well, you know, I guess I don't think about finding owls in daytime, and they would be impossible to photograph at night, wouldn't they, Larry? How have you taken pictures of owls?
In the wintertime, as Don, and he's done some really nice work on sawwits. I've a time or two have found them, and a good way is to make friends with birders. I'm a birder myself, but there are a whole lot of birders around who keep track of such things. So, and this year, there's been the snowy owl phenomenon that's been amazing. There's been, do you remember, Don, like 100 reports of snowy owls throughout the state? A lot of them.
Yeah, quite a few here in Iowa. And it's not only Iowa, but it's the surrounding states. And I think I saw something on one of the news services that it's over 1,200 snowy owls that have come down from the Arctic into the Midwest this winter, primarily because of lack of food up in the Arctic.
Yeah. But watching, there's some listservs on the Internet where people trade observations, and just when you're traveling, just being alert. We were lucky enough to see a snowy owl sitting on a utility pole in broad daylight over north of Grundy Center a month or so ago. But just when you're out and about watching for such things. So you mentioned night photography of owls. Years ago, I was lucky enough to have a friend who was liked great horned owls. He found a nest, and we were able to set up a scaffolding, 30 or 40 feet high, probably 30 feet from this nest, and got a couple of night shots of the great horned owl at the nest. But tell you what, that was an interesting challenge.
I'll bet it was. I'll bet it was. Ty, do you have anything to add on the subject of owls?
Well, I agree. Owls are very interesting. In fact, last fall, I also worked with a researcher who was trapping and banding sawwets at night. It was really interesting. They would play a call, and we were misnetting them. And as Don said, the owls come down from the north and migrate beginning in October, and they probably peak in early November. And it's just amazing how many sawwet owls are down here, short-eared owls, long-eared owls, and as Larry said, this year, the snowy owls.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. We're receiving a number of beautiful, beautiful images to our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you have a great photo that you'd like to send to our email address, we're going to post them all in an album on our Facebook page. And if you want to make sure you get credit for that photo, let us know your name, and we'll put that up with it. But be sure to put that in the email as well. I'm talking today with three of Iowa's premier nature photographers, Don Pogensee, Larry Stone, and Ty Smedes. And Danielle's on the line in Woodward. Hi, Danielle.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
What would you like to talk about?
Good morning to your wonderful photographers, all of whose work I'm very familiar with. question about photographing beaver dams in this flat light. My husband, Don, who Larry knows pretty well, is going to be heading off with a little Canon digital camera. This series of beaver dams, and there are four of them, have some very interesting elevation, but we're afraid we won't be able to capture that in this kind of light. And also, I was lucky enough to be part of the group that went to Yellowstone with Larry and others a couple of years ago, and he has some amazing shots of winter wildlife in Yellowstone, and he might talk about how he set up those shots.
Well, yeah, thanks, Danielle. You mentioned first in this light, and I always think about that. A friend of mine calls his camera a light writer. And, you know, there's really something to that. And I've been looking out my window here. You asked Ty earlier about, are there some days when you just don't go out? And he said, yeah, on one of those real cloudy overcast days. And I looked out my window and, boy, was it dull and flat. Since then, the sun has come out, and it's amazing how much different the landscape looks just in, you know, a few minutes when the sun comes in and out. So I guess my first recommendation for Don photographing the beaver dams is to look at them in several different you know, light situations, you know, maybe full sun, low light, high light, and from different angles, and to see how they're going to look different, because they really will change just and, you know, maybe not necessarily when the sun is out either. You know, on a snowy day, you might get some interesting images that way. So some of my favorite photos have been taken literally when it's snowing. You don't think about going out then, but, you know, that's an opportunity. Keep your lens, you know, covered so you don't get the snow on it, but it's worth doing.
Does snow occasionally create real light problems? Because with, you know, if it's a bright sunny day with the reflection, that's almost blinding light.
It really can, yeah. In fact, the most camera meters are set up to, for an average, there's a gray card that professional photographers use to sometimes meter with. Well, the camera meter wants to make your image, your finished image, essentially an average gray. If you go by the meter, sometimes your photo will turn out much too gray. So you may have to override the meter, overexpose a little bit to make white snow really look white instead of looking gray.
Don, do you have anything to add on snow?
Yes, Larry nailed it there. I love to photograph in the adverse weather, and especially overcast. Bright light can throw harsh shadows, and so you really have to have an appreciation for the light. And a lot of photographers don't realize you can use a flash outdoors under overcast condition, and you can meter it down a little bit, and you throw some artificial light in on the subject, and do very well. With really, really bright snow, as Larry was saying, the camera will tend to meter that as a medium or a gray. And especially when you, we did polar bears up in the Arctic, and you got a white polar bear on white snow, and the light being out, you got to overexpose that by 1.5-2 exposures just to get that white to look white.
We are getting some wonderful pictures. We're loading them up on our Facebook page right now if you want to take a look at some of the pictures taken of Iowa nature by your fellow listeners. You can also send us your great shots to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ty, we got an email from Bonnie, and she said, one of my favorites is from a day in February in 2007 in Belleville, Iowa. The Mississippi River had dozens of bald eagles around the dam and just south of it. Really amazing to witness. And as I mentioned earlier, Iowa has become a really wonderful place to take pictures of eagles, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have a few hundred eagles that summer here and nest and raise young. But in the winter, we have more than 3,000. We have eagles that come in from Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Canadian provinces. And As you know, everything is pretty much froze up north, so they migrate only as far south as they have to and where they can still find food. So some of those locks and dams, along the Mississippi and the interior rivers are just great for eagles now.
And this has been a pretty mild January. I like to eagle watch along the Iowa River, and I really haven't seen as many eagles. In the last couple of weeks, there have been a lot more. But has it been a harder winter to get great pictures?
It has. It's been a mild winter, and they're all spread out. I was monitoring my usual haunts along the Des Moines River yesterday, and it's amazing. It's just like the eagles have been assigned a post, like, just every few hundred yards or every quarter mile where I go. They're just not really concentrated.
Don, you spend a lot of time in the DeSoto National Wildlife Refuge and in wilderness places in western Iowa. Do you have some tips for people on how to find great spots to take pictures?
The best thing I could probably tell you is get to know the subjects that you're attempting to photograph. Let's say it's white-tailed deer or down at DeSoto Bend, the snow geese years ago used to come in there by the hundreds of thousands. And once you know your species and know their habits, then it's a matter of watching the light, time of day, and getting yourself in a position with a proper foreground or background to enhance the species that you're photographing. And as I've said for many years when I teach photography, many of the great images you see are the result of a lot of time and patience and knowing your subjects, and then actually putting those key elements together to come up with an image. And many of those images you see in magazines like National Geographic, they are what I call setup shots, meaning that the photographer has spent time looking at the subject, looking at the background, moving around, looking at the angles, and they're spending a lot of time to actually make that image. It just doesn't happen. It takes time and effort on the part of the photographer to get a good image.
Well, and I already asked Larry this question earlier, but Don, is there a holy grail for you? Is there something that you've been trying to get the picture of that you just haven't quite made it?
Well, Larry mentioned the snowy owls. I've been fortunate to photograph four snowy owls here in western Iowa, and I've always wanted to get that great image of the snowy owl coming right at you in the snow. I got some great in-flight images this year. I was working one mature snowy and worked him about 4 hours before he actually lifted off. And I was ready for him when he banked and turned and came back toward me. And it wasn't snowing. It was kind of bright light. But I had the camera set. I knew what the exposure was going to be. And I got about 9 images of him coming across the side of me and actually looking at me.
Wow.
And but again, it was about 2 hours of waiting, and then when he took off, I was prepared for him, and the blessing was that he didn't go away from me. He went out a little bit, and then he turned and came right back toward me. And that's just one of the keys of being out there and being ready and knowing your camera and your equipment.
Oh, that's great. Don, thank you. And Ty, before we run out of time, is there something that you're really hoping someday to get that picture of?
You know, I get asked that question quite a lot. I can't really say there is. I just love every new image of an animal, a bird or mammal, either one, that's hard to get. One of the iconic images for me, I took in 2008. I've been fortunate. I've been to Africa 5 times. I've led 4 trips. And it's easy to get lion photos, but it's very, very hard to get that iconic image, you know, in just perfect light at sunrise, warm light, just starting to hit a lion, a big male, female right beside him. And finally, I got that iconic image of a big male on a ridge with a female laying by him right after sunrise, perfect light.
Wow.
And there's 2 young males coming in the distance, and he's just standing there with an alert pose, roaring at them. And, You know, it took a lot of weeks in Africa, but that image is hanging over my couch.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you all so much today.
You're welcome.
Ty Smedes, Larry Stone, and Don Pogensey. And the pictures are coming in on our email address. You can send yours to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Then check on our Facebook page to see those shots. Facebook, Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. We had technical support from John Pemble today. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.